Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
When was the last time you refreshed your bedding? Sleep cooler with Avocado's naturally breathable, certified organic sheets. Choose from GOTS certified organic cotton, linen, or hemp, all made safe certified to the highest standards of non-toxic safety, delivering the ultimate in luxury, sustainability, and style, and a deeper, more restorative sleep. Join Avocado's mission to be one of the world's most sustainable brands at avocadomattress.com.
Hey guys, it's Allie. Welcome back to In for Layup, the podcast. This is episode 328 called Ricky Lindholm. This episode is sponsored by Extend Fertility. Fertility shouldn't be dictated by a timeline. Extend Fertility offers cutting-edge egg and embryo freezing, infertility care, and IVF, all designed to put you in control. Their approach? Research-driven, transparent, and personalized. With a world-class lab, exceptional verified success rates backed by nearly a decade of egg freezing results, and pricing lower than the national average, Extend Fertility is making reproductive care more accessible and effective than ever. Whether you're preserving fertility for the future or actively trying to conceive, they're here with expert support every step of the way. Learn more at extendfertility.com. Again, that's extendfertility.com. Thanks, Extend. Today's episode is sponsored by NewGen Families. Our friends and trusted partners at NewGen Families are dedicated to improving the family-building journey with safe, supportive, and ethical surrogacy. They understand the specific challenges intended parents face and provide compassionate, expert guidance every step of the way, including access to mental health care throughout the surrogacy journey. They've been there and they get it. In fact, their leadership team is made up of a parent through surrogacy and 2 experienced surrogates. The best part? NewGen Families is currently offering complimentary consultations to help you explore your path to parenthood. For more, go to newgenfamilies.com and be sure to mention Infertile AF when you connect with them. Again, that's newgenfamilies.com. Thanks so much, NewGen Families. This episode is brought to you by Belly. Are you thinking about growing your family? Whether you're just starting to plan or are actively trying to conceive, preconception health is key. That's where Belly comes in. Belly has vitamins to help both women and men optimize their health before pregnancy. With essential nutrients like folate, iodine, and zinc, Belly ensures your body is ready for this exciting next step. Belly goes beyond basic vitamins. Their unique formula supports reproductive health, hormone balance, and fertility, all while being made with the highest quality ingredients. Plus, Belly is created with only clean ingredients so that you can rest assured that you are making a safe choice for you and your future little one. When it comes to starting your family, take the first step with Belly. Give yourself and your future baby the best foundation for a healthy start. Visit bellybaby.com today and use code IAF15 for 15% off your first order. That's bellybaby.com, BELIBABY, for a healthier tomorrow. Belly Baby, because healthy beginnings start here. Thanks, Belly. All right, friends, are you going through some sort of infertility journey or building your family through ART? Then check out Fertility Rally. It's the community I wish I had when I was going through it. Everybody is welcome to join. We have 4 to 5 support groups every single week on Zoom. We have 4 private Facebook groups. We have virtual and IRL events, and there's hundreds of women who get it, who are going through it right now. Go to fertilityrally.com and check out our website, and you can become a member there. Or if you want to check out a group before you commit to anything, just DM me on InfertileAF Stories or Fertility Rally on Instagram. We would love to support you. We are the worst club with the best members. And if you're looking for a safe place to land, we are there for you. Also, don't forget to check out Work of Art, my children's book about IVF and ART. The second book is being printed now and will be out this summer. It's called Beautiful Bird, and it's another family building story. You can read all about it at infertileafgroup.com and find out more on my Instagram at infertileafstories. But check out my book, Work of Art. It's at infertileafgroup.com. Okay, you guys, I am so excited about today's guest. It's Ricky Lindholm, who is a comedian and actor. You probably know her from one of her millions of projects, including Knives Out or the TV series Wednesday or The Big Bang Theory or her musical duo Garfunkel and Oates. Or you might know her from her one-woman show that she just started performing, which is called Dead Inside, and it's all about her infertility journey. So today I'm going deep with Ricky about all of it, including IVF, pregnancy loss, adoption, and surrogacy, and she comes at it with total honesty and humor. So she is funny, obviously, and she's very real, and she's also going to talk about when her son Keaton was born and how she is raising him now with her husband, the one and only Fred Armisen. But Ricky is incredible. I can't thank her enough for sharing her story. I absolutely loved talking to her. And without further ado, this is Ricky's infertility story. Ricky, I'm so excited to meet you and talk to you. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Of course. So there's a lot to talk about here. You had a long infertility journey and you have been vocal about it, which I really appreciate. We'll get into all the details, but I always like to start with, have you always wanted to have kids?
Yeah, I just always thought I would. I was never that interested in marriage. Oddly, most people have that as their first thing and then kids are second. I was like, I don't know if I'll get married, but I was like, I know I'll have kids. Like, that's what I knew for sure.
Okay. So growing up, what did you learn about sex education, fertility, all that stuff?
Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing. Just like
common theme.
Don't do it, or, you know, just whatever you do, don't get pregnant. If you do, you know, it's, yeah, just very like vague and it's your fault kind of education.
You know? Yes. We always talk about how
responsibility to like stop the boys from taking what they want, you know,
100%. It was almost like being scared straight. Like they were like, don't have sex. You're going to get pregnant no matter what. Like that is such a common theme on this show. And the reason that I asked that is because I just want to highlight that, like, I feel like we all really, like, we were done a disservice by not knowing more about our bodies. Cause
yeah, completely. And it's still true to this day. Like when I mean, I don't talk to, you know, children about their bodies, but when I even talk to my people that I know in their early 20s and stuff, I'm like, was it the same for you? Yeah, it was. They're just like, yeah, I just am told nothing and just not to get. And I'm like, have you ever thought to get your fertility checked? And they're like, no, I'm so young. I can just, and I was like, but you don't know that.
Right.
You don't know, like you probably can, but it's like, if you're going to the gynecologist anyway, why isn't anyone checking your stuff?
Right. Just to even get a baseline.
Just to know.
You know, I think that so many of us, you know, you didn't, at least for me, I can speak for myself. I didn't even know anything about ovulation. I didn't know anything about all these acronyms, you know, in the fertility world. You know, I was looking at Hollywood and being like, oh, Halle Berry had a baby when she was in her 40s. Like, I can wait, you know. So I had secondary infertility and recurrent pregnancy loss between my daughter and my son. But it's like, I literally didn't know any of this stuff. I didn't even really know what IVF was.
No, me neither. You just kind of feel like it'll happen because you're so conditioned to think like you can get pregnant just so easily that you think like, absolutely. And you have all this time and that everyone's bodies just do that when it's like everyone's bodies are different.
Absolutely. Okay. So let's start with, where did your fertility journey begin? When did you start to try and what happened?
Well, I started when I was, you know, I was reading about it and it basically, you know, when you're 35 and it starts when things start to decline, I was 34 and I was, you know, not ready to have a baby, but I was like, I should go and get myself checked. I should go and, you know, nobody's checked anything. And I went to a fertility clinic and they were like, oh, you got to start right now. And I was
okay.
Like, oh,
what did they find? Or what did they tell you?
They told me I had low FSH or what, I had like low follicle count, and they were like good follicles, but it was low. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, you're, which I didn't know until last year that I had already started perimenopause.
Okay.
Nobody caught that. I've just found out myself by being in full menopause a decade later. Mm-hmm. Nobody mentioned that to me whatsoever. Mm-hmm. To this day, actually, nobody's ever. And I was like, oh, I look back and I'm like, yes, that makes sense.
Right.
I walked in and they're like, yeah, you got to start right now. And I did 3 rounds of IVF when I was 34.
Okay.
So had those, you know, on ice. And then I thought, okay, well, then I have all this insurance. Like, look at me. I did.
Right. So were you freezing your eggs? Were you freezing embryos? Or what did that look like?
Yes, and yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All of the above.
All of the above. And I was just like, preparing, you know, for like a little bit later. I was on tour all the time. I was working, right. I was saving money. I wasn't ready. And I also thought that I would maybe have a baby with a partner. I thought that would be the journey too. And so mm-hmm. I was like, I'm going to wait till I'm partnered. I'm going to wait till it's a better time. And I, you know, thought I did everything right. And I spent all this money and did all this surgery and I was mm-hmm. ready to go. So,
okay. So what did you, after those 3 rounds, what did you end up with? Like how many things were you able to like freeze? Or?
I don't talk about that.
Okay.
Which is so, I've talked about it. And then I was like, you know what? I've noticed it's like another way to make women feel bad about themselves.
Oh,
it's another piece of competition. It's another, like I'll tell my friends.
Sure.
But I realized I was like, oh, well, my first round, it just went horribly. It was just like all garbage. But like after that, I was like, you know what? This is, I found in all my conversations, like, well, how many did you get? And I was like, oh, I don't like this tone.
Oh, interesting. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't mean it like that. I just mean in the name of education, you know, and storytelling. But yes.
I know. No, you of course don't. No, not at all.
Yeah.
I'm just saying like.
But women talking to each other. Yeah.
From talking about it so much, I've been like, oh, I just somewhere along, you know, because we all have our own boundaries and stuff. Somewhere along the line, I was like, oh, I don't want to. I've realized it was like making people either feel overly confident compared to me or underly confident when everyone is just different. Every embryo is different. The quality of it, true. The likelihood, like you could just have one and you'll be and you're all set. You could have 40 and you're not. And
it's
I feel like I'm giving people either false hope or false despair. When the numbers are like every single embryo is its own, like,
yeah, it's kind of arbitrary. That's such a good way to put it. And that's coming from such a place of empathy too. Obviously you've been through a lot. I feel like having gone through, you know, whatever journey we're about to get into with you probably, you know, makes you have that opinion. Like you have felt bad at some point. So you don't want to make other people feel bad.
Totally. Or make other people feel like, oh, I'm good. If that's
right.
The case.
Right.
Like, you don't know. We all don't. Yeah. So it wasn't meant in a like, it's not even in a privacy way.
Yeah.
In like, I just realized that it wasn't helpful.
It's like coming from a loving way. Cause you don't want to like hurt anybody or like steer them down the wrong path. I love that. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of times in this world, when it comes to loss or, you know, how far along were you? Oh, you weren't that far along. You know, all these comparisons are so, I always say like a loss is a loss. It doesn't matter if you were 2 days pregnant, 13 weeks, you know, like you lost an embryo when it, you know, it didn't thaw, things. I just feel like we say, always say in Fertility Rally, which is the community that I started, it's not the pain Olympics. Like everybody's pain is valid.
Yeah.
You know, so
and it's like, depending on, you know, some people can sort of roll with the punches of things and some people
sure.
like takes them down completely. And they're like,
yeah,
it's not for me. It just depends on.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I read, I think it was in People that you at one point, maybe it was during these first 3 rounds of IVF that you were giving yourself shots in the LAX parking lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did that too. I did that exact. Yes.
No way. Cause you have to do it the same time every day. And yeah, they just let me take it in my carry-on, which I thought was odd. I'm like,
yeah,
I was like, I told my doctor, I was like, I can't take these needles and this, like, I can't take yogurt on a plane. I can't take. And they go, no, you have a doctor's note. And I was like, a note?
Right.
I brought a note and they were like, great, go ahead. And I was like,
totally.
All right.
Yes. Well, actually mine, it was at LAX, but it was actually in the gas station parking lot when before I returned my rental car or the gas station bathroom. And I remember going in there and being like, I had like a syringe. I felt like a junkie. Like I was like, oh my God, I'm going to get busted. Like someone's going to barge open the door and be like, what are you doing in here? And then I remember laughing because there was like, there was other needles in the garbage can. It was like,
oh, no.
And I was like, oh, maybe there actually were people in here shooting up. But
right.
It's so odd. And like the whole thing about giving yourself injections and mixing your meds and like, how was that for you? Was it overwhelming?
It was weird. The first time I did it, I felt very strange doing it myself. So the first week I went to the doctor's office every day at 6 a.m. and had them do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then like kind of the end of that week, they were like, why don't you try it here? And then I did. And I was like, okay, I got it. And then I started doing it myself, but it is a little nerve-wracking. And when I did it, there just wasn't as much information online. Like now mm-hmm. you can be like, how do I do my trigger shot? Like how you can read information. But then I was
totally,
I actually had to call the doctor at night.
Right.
Like, I'm sorry, this trigger, can you walk me through this? Like there was just no info. So I was like, I felt a little lost because I'm definitely not a medical professional. So
no, I know. I remember asking my doctor being like, so is there like some wiggle room here? Because like, I feel like a pretty smart person, but like, I'm going to fuck this up, I'm sure, in some way, like right. not measure it right or do it, you know, at a wrong time. Like, and he was like, there's some wiggle room. And I was like, okay, good. Like, cause you get, the stakes are so high, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, this is one thing you really do not want to screw up.
Yeah. So expensive. It's so painful. It's so weird.
Yeah, it is.
Get it right. Yeah.
It is so weird. Okay. So tell me what happened next after you did those three rounds.
So just, you know, moved on with my life, you know, but then I met someone a few years later and we started trying to have a baby and got pregnant naturally, which was nice. But then that baby, I had to get a DNC at 13 weeks, which was,
I'm so sorry. I read about that.
That was the worst. That was really hard. That was, it's actually odd that I made it that far in the pregnancy because there was so much wrong. You know, there was all these problems, but the main one was her heart was growing in the wrong place. Like it was a complete, you know, it wasn't going to make it to term. Like there, you know, we went to that genetic counseling.
Of course.
And then I was kind of like, okay, so what do we do? I'm so positive. I'm like, what's, and they were like, oh, honey, no, there's no way forward with this. And I was like, oh, then why did you make me sit here? Like they talked me through everything forever. And I was like, cause I thought we were going to like start looking at possibilities. And I was like, well, why'd I have to sit here for
this
conversation when they could have just been like, there's no way forward. Like,
right.
So I was like, okay.
I'm sorry. So how did you guys navigate that time? Like, how did you grieve and kind of work through that?
It was really hard. Cause we'd made it to the second trimester. It was like, it just felt like meant to be, it really felt like everything was coming together. And then, yeah, it was really sad. And my boyfriend at the time was really sad. And, you know, it was just like it was just a bad time. You know, I had the procedure and then we didn't really know what to do with ourselves. So we went to Palm Springs for a day to just like rest, you know, what are those called? The hot springs, you know.
Oh, okay.
Okay, we're just gonna. And I was really sick, and I was like throwing up, and I was like, I couldn't eat anything. And when you look online, that's normal, right? It's like okay, because that can happen. You just don't. It's a surgery, and it's a bigger surgery because it, you know, second trimester, and I thought that was normal. And then I just really wasn't feeling good, and I couldn't basically eat that weekend. And I was driving home and from my boyfriend's house after the trip, and I was like, I have to make myself eat something I hadn't eaten. And I got like crackers at like a 7-Eleven. And then I just immediately threw them up on the sidewalk.
Oh,
and I
no.
was like, okay, something's wrong.
Yeah.
And my fertility doctor's on the way home from my ex-boyfriend's house. And so I just kind of went in and they were like, oh, you need to go to the ER.
Okay. What was happening?
I retained products of conception.
Okay. Okay.
Meaning they didn't, you know, get it all out. I mean, sure, you know that, but
just yeah,
people don't know. And so I ended up in the ER and yeah, they had to make sure I hadn't gone septic and all that stuff. And, you know, they gave me fluid, antibiotics. And then a few days later, I had to have another DNC, like a second one.
Awful.
Yeah. And they still didn't get it all out.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Because I don't know exactly why. I didn't really look it up, but I guess that can happen. And then I had to have another procedure. So it was just like elongated time of like, you know, grief. And after the second procedure, I got this call that was like, do you want to shoot this movie in Utah? And I was like, hell yes. Oh my God. I need to get out.
Get me out of here. Yes.
It was like for like just a couple weeks. But then when I was there, I was like, oh my gosh, I think it's the same thing. So I had to, there was one female producer and I was like, I need to go back to Los Angeles. Like, can you, and I wasn't in every scene. I was only in like half the movie. And she was like, I told her what was going on. And I was like, I'm not ready to tell the men. Can you?
Yeah.
I got it. And she just said, she was just like, she told them I had a female emergency.
Okay.
And the guys were like, okay.
Yeah, we don't want to go there.
Sure. See you soon. You know? And so I went back and then that finally took care of it. And then I came back and filmed the rest of the movie.
Oh my God. So multiple surgeries after that. I'm so glad you're talking about this, Ricky, because I feel like people don't understand, you know, like how much women have to go through. And you know, you just are kind of expected to like obviously life goes on and you have to work and, you know, all this stuff. And oftentimes it's just kind of going on behind the scenes. So I think anytime we talk about this is just powerful and you know, helping people that might be listening, being like, oh my God, that happened to me too.
Totally. And the thing that was like really like landed on me is that like, you know, I was like throwing up and all this stuff, but I think if I maybe lived in another state, I might've waited it out. If I was in Texas, I wouldn't have gone to the ER. I think I might have been like, well, let me see. And I could have died.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's, you know, because I wouldn't want to face criminal prosecution or whatever.
Right. And
it was really, it really made me grateful to live in California.
Right. Absolutely. Wow. That's a lot. So what happened after that?
I had to have surgery on my uterus to fix the scarring from the multiple abortions because I had uterine scarring and we spent about a year like trying naturally and medically like at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we went all like ovulation sticks, acumen, mm-hmm. and all that stuff. And then I had four more surgeries to try to make embryos with my ex.
Okay.
I had PRP surgery where they injected PRP into my
uh-huh.
babies, and then they would do the, you know, the harvest it. I don't know. They take whatever that is.
Right. Retrieval. Yeah.
It didn't work the first time. Second time we ended up with an embryo. So
okay.
That was, you know, and then, before I was able to implant it, the guy broke up with me.
Okay.
So it was sort of like it was just like a bad 2 years of garbage.
Sounds awful.
Yeah. Looking back, he did me a favor because if he's the type the fertility journey was too much. I was like, well, what's raising a child together going to be? You know, if like,
totally.
That was too hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, you know, I think this can be so hard on a relationship. I've been really open about my husband and I, you know, trying for the second kid for several years and we already had our daughter. So at a certain point, you know, he wanted the next kid too, but it was like, I think we're good. And I was like, we're not good. You know, and we were like, not on the same page. Like I would have done anything. And, you know, financially we were like, you know, fighting about it and it's so expensive. And we almost split up. Like I remember at one point being like, well, if you don't want like, bye, you know, like I was ready to do it on my own. And, you know, like that's how badly I wanted it. And I think that again, you know, it's good to talk about how hard it can be. You know, we're still together. We made it, but it was rocky.
Always a lot of people, you know, my relationship didn't make it. And a lot of people, like you have to be so on the same page. And
totally. You know, I remember thinking too, like, I wish I didn't want this so badly because I'm like screwing everything up, but like, I can't not listen to my heart and my gut and my head and you know, all that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So we broke up February, 2020.
Oh, perfect.
So, yeah. It was great. I got to pandemic by myself.
Right. Right.
but the interesting thing about the pandemic for me was I had a very clear picture because a lot of my friends, it was right around the age where my friends were all having babies and mm-hmm. kids. And a lot of them had huge trouble with their partners in the pandemic because they, you know, maybe thought that like, oh, he's not helping as much because he's working or whatever. And then when no one had anything to do but take care of the kids and it was still all on the woman, it caused a lot of friction in some of my friends' relationships.
Yes.
And a voice became very clear to me, which like should have been clear before, but like, having a child alone is better than having it with the wrong person.
Yes.
Every day of the week.
I love that.
And I saw people who were like, realized for the first time during the pandemic, like, oh, this, I don't have a partner.
Yeah.
I have a spouse and I'm a single parent.
And yeah.
When we both had nothing to do and it was still all on me. Mm. And I was like, okay. So I was like, I'm okay to have, and it made me feel like I can have a baby alone. That's better than jumping in with like the wrong partner.
100%. There's a whole, you know, single mother by choice community, like within the infertility community, I'm sure you know. And I was talking to somebody the other day, interviewing her, and she was saying, you know, the one thing I've learned in this community is like all the single women who did do it on their own, not one of them regrets it. Cause it's like, you know, you get to make all the decisions. And, you know, she's like, if I don't want to do the dishes, then the dishes don't get done, but that's okay. It's cause I made that decision. And I was like, oh, this sounds dreamy. Like,
yeah, the worst part is when you do all the work, but you only get 50% of the decision-making. That is right. You're like, no, right. It should be proportionate, but it's not. Cause if they're a partner, they get to have a say and it's
right. You know, absolutely. So I did read that you kind of start exploring an adoption journey. Was that like around this time? And
yeah,
do you mind talking about that?
Yeah. Well, I tried to implant the embryos from when I was 34.
Okay.
Didn't take.
Okay.
Okay. So that was the start. And then I was like, okay, now what? Now what do I do? Because at that point, you know, I'd already done like the PRP, and they weren't really people. It was just so early COVID that people weren't like, yeah, come do a elective PRP surgery on your ovary. It was very like, for the women who were already pregnant, it was very need-based medical care. It wasn't elective. And so I was kind of stuck. I didn't have a partner. I just didn't have any options. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to adopt. And so I went down that road for about a year. I did the whole thing. You know, I got the adoption agency and I got certified by a social worker, and I had those weird pamphlets made, and it was really hard.
Like the story about you,
those like physical pamphlets. Have you seen those?
I've seen books, but I haven't. Yeah.
And it was really, mine was so embarrassing because a lot of people, you know, you get a photo shoot done and that wasn't a possibility because it was like March, 2020. And so I had cobble together. I had to like Photoshop other people out. I had to like, you know, this person's holding a glass of wine. I'd never had wholesome pictures taken.
Right.
It's like a party. You don't just like, not just like you on a couch or whatever. And
totally.
So I had to like really.
Your arm is like this, like around someone, but you have to Photoshop them out, and then it looks weird.
I had to get like really good at tech, and I had to make my own like weird.
Well, shit. Now today you could have used AI to do it.
I know.
But right.
Then it was like not a possibility.
Right.
Just like, and people that I knew, like everyone was dealing with their own major problems at that point, like dealing with COVID. So I couldn't be like, hey, do you know Photoshop? Like I was just alone. You know what I mean?
Totally.
And it was like, one of the hardest things was to get, you have to get a physical to get certified for adoption. Mm-hmm. I couldn't find anyone to give me a non-essential physical.
Wow.
And so I had to like really be resourceful. And I remembered there was a woman who'd come, I was show running this TV show called Another Period, and she would come to the set to do these physicals for all the actors to certify you for insurance mm-hmm. and like not health insurance, but like insurance to be able to work.
Right.
And I was like, I think I still have her number. And I called her and I just kind of told her what was going on. And I was like, yeah, I have a baby. I need to, my boyfriend left. And she was like, okay, come over and I'll give you a physical.
Amazing. Good.
She gave me a physical.
This episode is brought to you by Happy Mammoth. Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're definitely not alone. There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now, in our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. The good news? We don't have to suffer through any of it anymore because now we have Hormone Harmony, a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. Hormone Harmony is not just a hormone-supporting supplement. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. In fact, a bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. And the biggest benefit? Feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews, and there are more than 30,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. Okay, guys, so here is the very exciting news. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code INFERTILEF at checkout. Again, that's happymammoth.com and use the code INFERTILEF for 15% off. Thanks, Happy Mammoth.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS certified organic green mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support, natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a 1-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
Criminal record, even if you don't have one, you have to get like a blank one. It's all these things. I had to baby-proof my apartment, which was weird because I lived alone.
Right.
And to get it certified, it was, yes. But I had like the greatest social worker. We did all the visits on Zoom except for the last one where she, you know, approved my apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Finally got approved and then started that process. And
okay.
It was hard.
Yeah. Do you mind getting into what happened there?
Well, I had one match pretty quickly and it was really fraught. There was all like, there was so much stuff I didn't know about it. So I actually went to get, my mom and I went to get the baby and the dad was missing.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, well, no, you have to stay here and find the dad.
You have to?
That's
okay.
You have to get a private eye. You have to put ads in the newspaper. You have to like try to find the guy in a pandemic again. You have to try to find this man.
What?
And you have to go before a judge. And it's like all this stuff. And it was just very like, oh, this feels so fraught. It felt, it felt too overwhelming. I had just gone through this breakup and this,
absolutely
all these like loss. I was just like, it was June 2020 maybe.
Yeah. Okay.
And I was like, I was living in my office. I was like, this feels kind of crazy. And so,
yeah.
And then, and it was just like I was not getting matches. It just wasn't working. And I just like, was like, okay, I'm getting a surrogate.
Yeah. Before we get into the surrogacy piece of this, I would love to hear, like, how was your like mental health during all of this? You know, I think that you mentioned friends having babies and, you know, I talk to women, you know, all the time through Fertility Rally. We do this group every Wednesday night and it's different people at different, you know, going through various journeys. And we talk a lot about just the mental health piece of this and how devastating it could be. And, you know, seeing your friends, you know, quote unquote, pass you by or even like lap you, you know, some of them are on their second kid, you know, it's really hard. So how did that look for you?
It was interesting. At first, pre-pandemic, I was devastated. Like when I ended up in the ER, this is totally true. I was at the ER at Cedars. My friend was actually upstairs giving birth, one of my best friends. So she's like, and she sent me the picture and I go, oh, I'm actually in the emergency. Like, and I was like, yeah, I had to. And she was like, oh my gosh. So on the same day.
Oh my God.
Happened.
And, yeah.
And we had a joke because this really happened when I was in the emergency room. It was like the worst day of my life. And this woman, the technician, was giving me an ultrasound and was like, oh my gosh, you're that girl from Big Bang Theory. And I was like, oh my God. So we had a joke where it was like, I made light of it. It was like, well, you got a baby, but I got recognized. So,
right.
So, I sort of would like make light of it. And like,
right.
And then once the pandemic happened, I was in full manic denial. I was not depressed. I was like, I was just in like a manic state of like, because I was very alone. Mm-hmm. Everyone had their own problems.
Mm-hmm.
All my friends with babies everyone was dealing with their own pods and mm-hmm. I was in a pod by myself. Mm-hmm. I was having trouble, you know, I wanted to talk to my friends about what was in the, you know, and, you know, to no fault of their own, but they would just be like, hey, what's up? I can talk. And I'm like, you really can't. I can tell you're dealing with your own. So I was just like, I am on my own.
Yes.
And so I just would like wake up and I would write all day. And because I'm also a writer, and then I would like do fertility tasks. And that's all, like, just all I did all day.
Wow. Long. Yeah.
I was just like, nothing's happening. I'm fine. Like, that's how I dealt with it.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Which, just because I didn't have anyone to talk to.
Were you working on like the songs and things for your latest, like, Infertile Princess, which I want to talk about?
No.
Was this
God? Okay. No.
I
was not able to explore those feelings until well after I'd had a child. Like,
yeah.
I couldn't even think about that stuff. I was writing a movie for Disney. I was writing a movie for Netflix. I was like, just writing.
So you just poured yourself into your work because that's how you cope. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense.
Pilots, just because I was just.
You're like, I've never been more prolific.
Yeah. In 2020, I wrote 35 songs.
Oh my God.
That's how manic I like.
That's amazing.
It.
Yeah.
Wrote. And
yes.
Like, I feel like I became a much better writer that year and a much better songwriter.
Yeah.
Also, looking back, I was like, wow, I was completely cut off from my feelings. And
right. Yeah.
So I dealt with it. Just that was the best way I could. That's the best I knew how. Because I was like really felt like a burden to my friends. Like, they just didn't mm-hmm. have the bandwidth for me. And mm-hmm. I was just like, okay, I'm really alone. And I need to just move forward by myself. And mm-hmm. and like, oddly, I didn't find an online community. I didn't look, and I should have, but I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't look.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I felt the same way. You know, when I was going through it, like looking at like Facebook groups, and I was like, these aren't my people. Like, I just couldn't find like the group, you know, or like people to talk to. So I get it. Okay. Let's talk about your surrogacy path. So what did you know anybody who'd gone through it? Did you have anybody you could consult, or like, what do I do? It's, you know, obviously there's a million questions. Did you have someone who like could help you navigate it at first?
I talked to one friend, but they had sort of they had a different situation. It was like a family member, like carried the baby, and it was all sort of, it was all in-house kind of thing. So it was very different. That was my only friend who'd done that, that I was close with. But surrogacy wasn't my next step. My next step is I was going to, because as far as I knew, my uterus and my endometrial lining were good. I just didn't have the embryos. So I was like, I'm going to get donor embryos mm-hmm. and carry a baby. That was my plan.
Okay.
And I didn't know that I had silent endometriosis. So I was, as I was trying to get these embryos, I went to a different doctor who realized I had silent endometriosis, which is kind of what had been, you know, I'd had that the whole time. I didn't know
it. Right. And then was that the perimenopause too, when they told you about that? Or was that?
No one ever told me about that.
Oh, no. Oh, you figured it out. Okay.
Backwards when I was in menopause. I was like, wait a minute. Wait, I went to so many doctors, so many gynecologists, fertility people. Like, you know, they test you for everything because they're like, you're not having a baby. We're trying to figure out why. Mm-hmm. Nobody was like, oh, you're in. Nobody. Not one.
Uh-huh.
So that was.
Okay.
That was.
It's so frustrating.
Retroactive self-diagnosis.
Right. Got it. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. But
they realized that and they were like, we just don't think you're going to be able to hold a pregnancy. And so then I did surrogacy.
Okay. So how was the surrogacy path for you?
It was amazing because I'd already been looking into the donor eggs. So I'd been researching all these places and I found mm-hmm. the place that I was getting the donor eggs from. And then I kind of looked on their website and they had a surrogacy service as part of the thing. And I was like, oh. And then I matched with a surrogate immediately.
Okay.
Nothing was faster. It was like, after like 7 years of like everything failing, surrogacy was absolutely immediate. It was like the best person for me. And it just, from then on, it was like the best.
Okay. So what was it about the surrogate that you got that made you guys click? Did you guys like meet on Zoom or like meet mm-hmm. in person? This is post COVID, right?
No. Oh my
God. No, still pandemic. Okay.
Yeah. This was 2021.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. It was like February 2021, like right around there. And
gotcha.
Yeah. No, it was like, we were just like laughing a lot. And I was so tired at that point where she was like, you know, what are your rules for me? And I was very like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I didn't know I had to have rules. And she was like, oh no, you don't have to. I was like, well, you're not supposed to drink alcohol. And she's like, well, I don't. And so I was like, oh, okay. Well, that's my, I guess that's my rule. And she, we were, it was just so easy. And she'd done it before. She'd already had three babies. She was just very like smart and steady and interesting and just like a trustworthy human. And it just felt like, and we were just like laughing because like we were just, we just kept joking that she was more viscous than me. And we were talking about our butt, like we were just laughing about the gross things about anatomy.
Right.
And I was like, wow, that was so crazy. That was so good. I was like, that was too good to be true.
I'm so glad that you had that experience where it was finally, like you probably finally felt like, okay, it's happening. Yeah. Like we're moving in the right direction, you know.
But this, then I was like in denial, where I was like, oh, she's not going to pick me because that was too good. Like it's going to fall
too good. Yes.
And
yes.
She called the agency. The agency called me and she thought I was too good to be true. She was like, because she was like, no, she was like, I need you to check on this. Like call her. And because she's like, oh, this woman has no rules. This woman has like, she's like, what's going on?
And, right.
And I was like, no, it's just, I've been through too much and I've done all the research. And like, you know, if she doesn't eat iron, my baby still gets iron. Like they're parasites. They get all their stuff first. She's going to feel bad. The baby's going to be fine. Like, as long as she doesn't drink, like it's like basically,
yeah,
it's fine.
Right.
Like if she doesn't eat carrots, she's going to feel bad. The baby's fine. And basically, like,
amazing.
Like, you know what I mean? I mean, it's a little complicated than that.
No, I know what you mean though. Yeah.
Essentially the truth. And so I was like, it's, you know, it's, and they talked to me about it and they were like, okay, well, yeah, she wants to do it. And then, it was so,
oh my God, that must have been a great phone call.
It was awesome. It was,
I just got the chills.
I know. It was so awesome. It was so great. And she was the best. She just like, she, the first Mother's Day after we matched, she dressed up in like a Handmaid's Tale costume and sent me a picture of her under his eye. And I was like, this is the greatest text I've ever got. Like, she's just funny.
That's amazing.
Yeah. She's just like a funny, cool, like, you know, like we like, you know, cause it's not a light situation at all.
Right.
But we were like, making light of it, you know, to like bring, to see the joy in it, to like have it not as heavy, innately heavy. So it's like, how do we see the joy? How do we see the humor?
Right.
You know, and So and our journey together was amazing.
Okay. So was it embryo adoption that was implanted in the surrogate?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, and then did it work? Like, I mean, on the first time?
First time.
Okay.
And she was very,
oh my God.
They, all the surrogates, they have their own rules and their own, you know, because it's their body. So they have their own ways of doing things. And she would only do one embryo at a time. So in my mind, I was like, well, it's going to be three or four times. And then first time.
It, oh my God. Yeah. How did it feel to get that phone call that she was pregnant?
It was amazing. But no, but it's still, you know, I had been through so much at that point. Like, because there was also, you know, miscarriages, like I had the whole thing. I had all of it.
Yeah.
That you can imagine. And so at this point I was a little like, my expectations were like, we'll see, you know, even when, okay, she's pregnant, but we'll see. Everything was very like that for me. It was one at a time. And then it just kept progressing. And then, but right after the implant, I got a job in Romania. So I went to Romania for 7 months.
Right. To film Wednesday.
Yes.
Oh my God. I watched that with my son, the whole thing. Like we binged it. He loved it.
Isn't it great?
It's, I loved it too. It was so, so good.
It was so, it was such a blessing because I couldn't micromanage if I wanted to. We were 13 hours ahead or whatever it was.
Right.
Like I had to just kind of go, okay, we'll see what, like I couldn't go to the appointments. I couldn't do it.
Right.
She kept me abreast of everything. But
yeah. Was she in California?
Yeah, she was in Long Beach.
Okay. Oh, wow. That's that's great.
No, it was perfect.
And
so every step, it just kept going.
Right.
And then after about the 5 month mark, I was like, oh, I think this is happening.
Right. Isn't that funny? Like
excited again.
Yeah. I think it's partly like trauma brain, you know, and always waiting for the other shoe to drop, especially after going through all the things that you've been through and, you know, being so used to getting bad news and being on the wrong side of the statistics and, you know, all that stuff that it's like, wait, this is actually going to work. And you're like skeptical.
I was like, wait, what? Cause you know, cause I got so excited at that pregnancy where I had to terminate. I was like, for I knew it was happening. Like I was, I would talk to the baby every day. I was like, I would already was buying furniture. Like I was like this, and then I was like, oh, I need to
dial it back.
Yes. I don't know.
Yeah.
Everything's the right. question mark. And so
right.
it just kind of kept progressing. And then,
right.
Yeah. You didn't do surrogacy?
I didn't. No, I did. I did IVF. Yeah.
Yeah. It's you know, obviously the downside is the cost. It's astronomical.
It just is.
There's no way of getting around that. Like the privilege of it is huge. Mm-hmm. There's no deny. Yeah. It's just not accessible for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I also felt that very acutely. I was like, I need to be so grateful because so many other people would not have this option.
Right.
To like really be so, so grateful and take the options that are in front of me.
Right. You know? Yeah. Yeah. So was it around that 5 month mark that you were able to kind of like exhale a little bit at least and like, okay, this actually might, you know, bring me a baby.
And I was like, okay, I can start thinking about names. And
yeah,
I started and with my co-stars on Wednesday, I started being like, I think this is happening. I don't know, but I think it is. And
right.
You know, everyone was so excited and they shot me out. Like they wrapped me early so I could go home for the.
Oh,
yeah, it was, and I had to do all this stuff in case it happened early. Like I had to do like a power of attorney. I had to do all this extra paperwork in case so that she right. would have custody of the baby for like 2 days till I came or all this junk you have to do. But
right. The legal part of it too. I mean, we could do a whole nother hour on just that alone. And it's still so confusing to me, even though I've talked to surrogacy lawyers and so many people that have done, it's like, oh my gosh. So that like that piece, I'm sure again, was just overwhelming and like something
you're good. Like if they've done it before, it's so much easier. If you get lucky enough to find someone who's done it before, they've been through it. They know,
right.
It's not as, you know,
right. So can you tell me about when your son was born?
Oh my gosh. It was the greatest. So she had a scheduled C-section and okay. I flew back from Romania right before. And
okay. as one does,
I had no stuff. And in Romania, it's like a different internet. So I couldn't even like buy stuff on Amazon. I couldn't send stuff to my house. And my friend actually who gave birth in Cedars, she was like, okay. You have to have a baby shower. And I was like, I don't have time. She was like, well, we'll do a Zoom one, but you need a registry because you need to have the stuff.
Right.
And so I had like sort of the most unromantic registry. It was like all these diapers. It was like the real need stuff.
Right.
Like,
right.
I actually couldn't buy from Romania. So it was right. like, can you get me like a little baby tub and these kind of, there was no like teddy bears on there. It was all like
right.
real stuff.
The essentials. Yeah.
Yes. And when I came home, the building I live in, they were like, you have all these boxes. And I was just like taking, like opening, like
great.
And like all this.
They're stuff. Like, you have 24 boxes of diapers, yes. Ricky. Like they're taking yeah. up the hallway.
Right. And my apartment was just filled.
Right.
And then I went, she had a scheduled C-section and we had adjoining rooms and she could only have one person in the surgery because of COVID.
Yeah.
So she had her husband in there and I was just, in my little like room by myself.
Right.
And then of course I became convinced that it was going to fail.
Oh,
like, you know, I'd like, but totally. Then, I get a text from her husband and it's just a picture of, he says one Keaton burrito headed your way. And I was like, oh my God. And I was like, I just couldn't believe it. And then,
yes.
Yeah. And then we had like kind of this like very hard, beautiful 24 hours together, me and her husband. Because I was in one room, we were in adjoining rooms, and she would, she would breastfeed him, and then the husband, I was like terrified to burp him because they're so small.
And they're
I can't. So
yeah,
she would breastfeed, the husband would burp him, and then I would do skin to skin for like an hour.
Yeah,
and then they do that glucose test on his
and the heel. Yeah,
on the heel, and then there was like a problem with the glucose test, so we had to have it every hour.
Oh.
So he like hate, you know, but we just kept doing this rotation where,
right.
I just stayed up the whole time. So she would breastfeed, fall asleep,
right.
and then skin to skin, you know, we just had this, the three of us in this, like, you know, just, we were just in this rotation all night.
Yeah.
Long.
Yes.
In the morning I got to take him home.
Oh my gosh. So his name is Keaton.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. That's so great. That's yeah. so great. So was it, I know people, it sounds like you bonded, you know, fairly quickly with him and, you know, I've talked to other people who were worried, like, what if I don't bond with my baby, you know, not physically carrying him? Like, can you talk about that a little bit? Like, were you nervous about that at all? Or
I was a little bit, I think that it's looking back, like the denial helped me. I was a little bit in denial about everything.
Yeah.
Cause the stuff I've told you, that's like, you know, half of the dirt. Like I had just so many things went wrong and I was just a little bit in denial about stuff where it all, like about 3 months after he was born, my body like shut down. I got so sick. I got a flu. Like the whole world was like, okay, all this emotion you've been like, it's now it's here, you know? And I was like, what? And I was in bed for like 2 weeks. It was, I didn't feel like I was gonna, I wasn't actually that worried and it was fine.
Yeah.
I was actually more worried because I was like, oh, I wanted a girl. And then I was like, oh, I don't care either. Like I didn't care. Totally. I was just like, you get this teeny little thing and they're
right.
Your responsibility. It's just like,
right.
Yeah.
And I think
where I didn't have that problem.
That's amazing. I think I also read that you're still in touch with the surrogate. I mean, she sounds like a family member at this
birthday party last weekend. Yeah, it's Keaton and I went to Long Beach and yeah.
So what will you tell Keaton as he gets older about, you know, how he came into this world? I wrote a children's book about IVF and how my son was born. And I just wrote the second one, which is actually single mom by choice, who ended up in a different family situation because her donor and his partner fell in love with the baby too. So now they're kind of all raising him together. So I know there was a quote that you had about having like an Insta family with Fred, your husband, yeah, which I thought was beautiful. So point being, you know, I think it's my theory and everybody's different, of course, but like, talk about it with kids, make it normal that, you know, there's a lot of different ways that families can be created. And I think that's really important. So what's your take and like, what will you tell your son?
Well, so I did all those adoption classes, you know, you do have to do all these hours of training about this exact thing. You know, there's parenthood training, but there's also the explaining it, mm-hmm, to, you know, and so I kind of had learned a bunch about that through the adoption. And I was like, oh, it's the same philosophy. And mm-hmm, it's basically what you said. Like, mm-hmm, the research now is very like, they're going to find out. Let's not make it a betrayal. Let's not make it like they're going to get, you know, who knows, they'll get DNA tests in kindergarten or something. You know, the technology is changing so fast.
Right.
It's that trade has left the station. And so in adoption, just says like reframe it. Like, we wanted you so bad that we did that. You know, no, I would do anything. We did this. My belly wouldn't let me carry you, so I got someone else's belly. And mm-hmm, I already talked to him about it. He doesn't get it, but I talked to him about it to like make it just part of the normal.
Totally.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. That's amazing. Yeah. So when were you able to kind of pour this back into your work? You know, you've created these songs, like we mentioned Infertile Princess and some other ones, and then Dead Inside, right?
Yeah. It was probably like a year. When he was like a year or two old, it was maybe a year and a half where I sort of processed everything that had gone on that I'd been in denial about for years at that point. And then I was sort of, it all kind of hit me and it was just all these emotions were pretty constant. And I was like, okay, I need to put this somewhere. And I just started writing.
Yeah.
And then it sort of turned into my show Dead Inside, but it was, it all kind of unfolded just little bit by bit.
Right. And what's the response been from people?
It's been, are you in Los Angeles?
I'm in New York or Jersey, but just outside Jersey. New York.
Okay. I was gonna say you should come see it. It's, I'm doing it in DC this summer, but in New York at some point, but it's been amazing. And I really didn't know, like, I'm sure when you started this podcast, it's like, just even the title, you're like, is this something that people are going to crave and want? Or are they going to be like, that's too much?
You know? Right. Yes.
It was the former, which I'm sure you've experienced. I mean, you've done so many episodes. I'm sure you have the same.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. You know, it's hard to like make yourself vulnerable too and put yourself out there. Right. But did you have anything that like you were nervous to talk about or anything that you were like, I'm not going to include that? It's like a little too.
I did. And so the show is like, I had to like, because the first draft of the show, I just say everything. And then I was like, oh, no, I have the right to say some things and not other things. I don't have to, you know, I don't talk about the miscarriage part of it because it's a little amorphous, too. Because sometimes you're like, was that or was I what happened with that? Or, you know, and I was just like, I'm not going to, I just like left that out. Like, I was like, I'm going to talk about sort of some big scenes and then. Yeah, but I had to give myself permission to actually say less.
Exactly.
I was like, oh, I don't want to tell people this. And I was like, oh, I don't have to.
Yeah. You're like, oh, wait, I don't have to.
It's my show. Perfect. I can do what I want. Yeah. So
that's
some of it,
amazing.
Some of it's in there and some of it's not. And
oh, my God. I can't wait to see it at some point. Definitely. So
it's
before
true, it's just, you know, I sort of skip certain periods.
Exactly. Yeah. That makes sense. So before we wrap, which we will in a second, I always love to ask people, you know, having gone through everything that you've gone through, what would you tell somebody who might be listening, who's like in the thick of it and like not sure what's going to happen, probably having a hard time? Like, what do you know now that you didn't know then?
Well, it's sort of twofold. So it's part of it is the thing that I like, one of the messages, the big message of my show is I just kind of stop at one point and I was like, have you ever heard someone say so much on stage? Like, this is a problem that we don't talk about this. Like the fact that this feels like a lot is a problem because we don't actually tell people anything. We don't actually have the information. We're not talking to each other. And like, you know, it's also about being a woman and how sometimes in our society, we feel like we don't get like the special information to get to the next level. We're not on the mm-hmm. inside. Mm-hmm. And so it's about that too. And how like part of the reason we don't have that is because we don't tell each other.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all just like by ourselves and, mm-hmm. and how like it's so, you know, I didn't have the privilege of like reaching out to people because of my timing. And maybe I could have tried harder, but I didn't. And I feel like it's like, talk to people, have people you trust, have someone else on the journey, have, you know, it's not your fault. Nobody knows anything. We do not know why, you know, someone can be literally on crack and they have a perfectly healthy baby. And then someone who is quote unquote doing everything right, it's not working for them because we do not know that much about women's health. It is not your fault. We do not know, like, just like give yourself a break, you know, just, yeah. And also like, maybe don't take advice from people who had a baby right away because they don't understand. They're like, no, what I did was I just thought this and then I got pregnant. It's like, okay, well then you're on your journey. Like maybe talk to people who are also having a similar thing. And then, but my biggest thing is like to the younger people, it's like, get tested.
Yes.
For yourself. Cause you don't totally. You don't want to do, everyone, including myself, thinks you're exempt from this journey and you're not. And you can find out when you're 20, you can go in and see what your deal is. Like just save the money, pay for it, get the test, get informed, mm-hmm. and then proceed accordingly. You can go to the gynecologist a million times. They're not going to tell you if you have endometriosis or what, you know, whatever it is.
All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. And thanks again to Ricky for sharing her story. Guys, check out her one woman show. It's called Dead Inside. I can't wait to see it. I hope I get to see it this summer. Check out all of her amazing projects and her music. She's super prolific, so she's got a lot out there. Also, check out Fertility Rally if you're looking for a support group and a community that really gets it. We're on Instagram at Fertility Rally or our website, which is fertilityrally.com. And once again, check out Work of Art, which is my book where the aim is to normalize the conversation about family building in so many different ways. So Work of Art is on there now. And pretty soon you'll see book number two, which is called Beautiful Bird. You can find out more on my website at infertileafgroup.com. Thank you again for listening. Thanks again to Ricky. And I will talk to you guys next time.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively to Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.